Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, November 16th, 2013. This is episode 1031. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by RingCentral. I love my cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial, and when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to a total of 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk about computers and the internet and cell phones and camcorders and MP3 players and home theater and all that jazz. That's what we talk about each and every week right here. I'm so glad you're here today. Phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. That's 888-827-5536. You'll be saying hello to the phone ranger, Heather Hammond, who is ready with her new iPhone 5S. She won't be answering your call on the 5S. Yeah. So,
I ripped off the new
band. Talk about ripping off the Band-Aid.
New.
Yeah. Some people leave those on, you know, the plastic covers to kind of keep it pristine. It's like having plastic covers in your furniture. I think eventually you probably should take it off.
Thank you. I hate that.
Yeah. So, you've got rid of it now.
Yes. I take...
And are you going to get a case or are you going to go bareback on that thing?
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'll get a case. I'm pretty sure the 5S case won't fit it. I can see that there's differences.
Well, you have a 5S. You mean the 5?
I mean the 4S, sorry.
4S will not. 5 will. Because this is the current iPhone is really just a modification of the last year's iPhone. But you went way back in time. Yeah, it's bigger. You notice it's one row of icons larger.
Right.
So it's taller. So, yeah, you have to get a new case.
But, it looks good. Huh?
So what do you think? Yeah, it looks good on you, sir. That's what she wants to know. And you got the gold.
Because I thought it would go with my freckles.
You know what's funny is that reports are that nobody's buying the gold, and yet everyone I know bought gold. So
weird.
I'm trying to figure out, do I know? I must know fancy people. I don't. Everybody's buying the black or the space gray.
I
like the gold myself. Yeah.
It's an understated gold. It's too
champagne
blingy.
Is a much better description.
We keep calling it champagne.
So the real difference, though, is there are two differences, the camera and the fingerprint reader. So what do you think on both accounts?
So far, so good. But again, I've not quite had 24 hours with the thing.
Oh, well, it's a little early. Yeah.
So I've just
I won't ask you about battery life then for sure.
Liking it so far.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad you got it. You got to keep reporting back.
I will.
Because
I'm
a bit of a... Android bigot. I kind of prefer the Androidians.
And I'll be the one that likes all the Mac stuff.
Well, I like Mac stuff. That's just the iPhone. I'm kind of feel like the iPhone is left a little behind. Although, again, everybody buys iPhones. That seems to be the phone of choice. Latest numbers are that 81% of all smartphones worldwide are Android. So rapidly taking over the world.
Is that an affordability issue?
Yeah, because not so much in the U.S., where I think the iPhone still has more than half of all smartphone use. But worldwide, there are lots of inexpensive Android phones. But that's what's interesting. Now, the folks at Nokia have done an inexpensive Windows phone, the 520, which is starting to be very popular worldwide. Republic Wireless in the U.S., which is an MVNO for Sprint. That means they resell Sprint service, kind of like Disney or Walmart or Straight Talk, all the different kind of oddball contract-free services. They're offering the Moto X, which is my favorite Android phone, for $299. So the prices, and that's without a contract, so that's unsubsidized. So the prices are falling even in the U.S. for Android phones. Apple... On the other hand, we thought Apple's going to suddenly get very excited about low-cost phones with the 5C, that was the rumor before they actually announced the price. No, it's not. It's $100 less than the 5S. It is not what I would call an inexpensive phone. And this is pretty much the way Apple's always worked. They've never made or never attempted to make a really inexpensive. I guess the iPods got pretty inexpensive, down to $99. At some point, Apple decided in the world of the iPod, they wanted to own it all. And they did. that was the MP3 player, wasn't it? This year at Apple's October event, they didn't even mention the iPod. There were no new iPods this year. And I think it's probably the case there won't be ever any new iPods ever again. Sales have tapered off on the iPod because everybody's got a smartphone and it does pretty much the same thing. Doesn't store quite as much, maybe. So I find that, once again, these changes, they happen so rapidly. It was just the other day that the iPods were, were the hot consumer item, the hot ticket for the holiday buying season. Now it's probably tablets, and it's not just iPads anymore. For the first couple of years, Apple owned the tablet space. The iPads were the best. Now there's some very good and very inexpensive choices running Android and Windows. These Windows RT tablets. I guess Microsoft doesn't call them that anymore. But Microsoft sells the Surface 2. That's a version of Windows designed for the tablet, the Windows RT. And Nokia will next week start selling the 2520, which is also Windows RT based, although Nokia is not saying RT either. Nokia's little 8-inch tablet will be available from Verizon and AT&T on November 22nd. Roughly the same, maybe a little less because they're subsidized by the phone companies as an iPad. $400 on, but this is one running Windows 8.1 RT. It comes with Microsoft Office free. AT&T will have black colors on with a 2-year agreement for $400. And Verizon, I think, will be very similar. The iPad starts at the same price for the iPad mini. So I guess it's the same price, isn't it? $399 for the iPad mini with Retina display. Just got mine this week. Apple surprised everybody. On Tuesday, they said, oh, by the way, you could get these now. They didn't even, like, there was no press release or anything. Just at midnight, the Apple, midnight Cupertino time, Cupertino, California is where Apple is, they shut the Apple online store. Everybody went, you know, there's a legion of people who watch like hawks. And everybody on Twitter, the Apple store is down. What's going on? And at midnight, it came back up. And all of a sudden, lo and behold, you could buy an iPad mini with Retina display. Which means that a lot of people got up that morning and rushed to their browsers to get that new iPad mini. I did because I had a feeling it's going to be out. They're going to be out of stock fast. And in fact, availability has declined rapidly. Depending on the model you want. Not as bad as I thought it would be. You could still go to an Apple store today. There's a site. This is very strange. Apple keeps putting these sites out of business. These third-party sites that show iPad availability, Apple keeps sending them cease and desist letters. Weirdly enough, and this is probably a smart PR move, a site that promotes adopting sea turtles for the holiday. They're a sea turtle conservation site. Yes, I know. This seems odd. SeaTurtle.org has... It says, public service, check availability of the iPad mini in your local store so you can see which one you're looking for. Enter your zip code and check availability. Or they have a full availability grid in colors showing iPad mini availability at all the Apple stores nationwide. Wow. So if you look at that, you can quickly grasp how availability is going. On this grid, they show it in green where the iPad mini is available. And there's availability of certain models in some cases, some places, but not everywhere. And I have a feeling we're running low. But nevertheless, I thought by now you wouldn't be able to get one. It'd be a 3 or 4 week delay. but you can walk into an Apple store, certain Apple stores. If you're in, let's say, you're in Anchorage, Alaska, you could go to the Fifth Avenue Mall, and you could get a 16-gigabyte Wi-Fi in gray or a 32-gigabyte Wi-Fi in silver. That'd be it. So run to Anchorage, Alaska. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. 888-827-5536. We'll talk more about the Mini and more. Stay here. Hey, let me talk about Ring Central. You know, we do everything in the cloud here. We love the cloud. And when it was time to buy a phone system for the brick house, I decided that I did not want to lease a big old, you know, PBX in the basement with all the complexity and the cost that involves. But I did need to have a phone system, and I had need to have voicemail. I wanted a directory tree. I wanted the ability of somebody to call the 800 number and they'd say, okay, you know, here's the extensions, or if you know your party's name, or you can enter it in, all of that stuff. And then I thought more about it. I thought, well, and we'd also like to keep using our cell phones to place calls from the business number, place texts, receive faxes in our inbox. I don't want voicemail. I don't want to have to go to my phone to get my voicemail. I want to be able to get it wherever I am. Ring Central does all of that and more. Because it's in the cloud, they're constantly adding new features. They call it call functioning. So the way that works is really nice. Instead of just saying, ring all my phones, you know, when a phone call comes in, you can actually say, ring this phone first. Ring my desk phone, my office phone. If no answer there, then go to my cell phone. If no answer there, then go to my home phone. You can say, how many rings? You'll never miss an important business call again. Ring Central, all-inclusive pricing as low as $20 a month per user. We love that. When a new employee comes in, we give them the phone, they plug it in, and they're gone. They're good to go. They're done. No special configuration. Right now, if you want to try it for 30 days free, you can using our offer code. And by the way, when you buy a desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to 20 phones total. Here's the number, 800-543-9980. Or if you want to know more, visit ringcentral.com. Look at the demo and all that, and then use the offer code TWIT when you take advantage of the free trial. It says right there, radio listeners, the offer code is TWIT, and that'll give you the deal and the all sorts of stuff. 30 days free, 800. This is a special number you won't see anywhere on the site, just for you, 800-543-9980. If you're a small business looking, look who uses it. Lyft uses it. New York Genome Center. RevShare. Applebee's. Trusty. RingCentral.com. Offer code TWIT or call 800-543-9980. You're going to love it like we do. 2 years and we love it. Ubladi, ubladi, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Our website, techguylabs.com. That has the phone number, that has a link to the chat room where you're more than welcome to join us and be the kids in the back of the class harassing the teacher. That's okay. No spitballs, though. Also, if you go to techguylabs.com, you'll find links to all of the shows, all the audio, the video available freely. We are streaming as well there. Everything you could possibly want. TechGuyLabs.com. I was listening this morning to a talk by Steve Jobs to a design conference in 1983. It was really interesting. I mean, the Macintosh hadn't come out yet, but he was saying I thought a very apt comparison. I doubt he invented it, but maybe he did. He pointed out that with the invention of sub-horsepower engines, you know, little engines that generated some power but not a lot, back in the turn of this last century, the household was revolutionized, wasn't it? I mean, washing machines, you know, dishwashers, microwave, everything. All of the appliances, suddenly these small engines were everywhere in our lives. And he likened computing to that. And I think this is apt. So in the early days of computing, they were big. They were giant. They were very expensive. They were only owned by the military, research institutions, universities, places like that. And then they came up with time sharing, which would slice the computer's time into little bits, and you could have a timeshare computer. But in the 1976, maybe a little earlier, 1975, the microcomputer was invented, a computer you could own. And he said it's like the sub-single horsepower engines that dominate the household. All of a sudden, you start seeing computers everywhere. Now, this was in 1983, Jobs is saying this, and of course, he was right. And I suspect he knew that in 20 or 30 years, you'd see him 30 years ago. Wow. You'd see him everywhere. And you do, more so even than these engines. You see computers in everywhere, in your pocket with your phone, in your telephone, in your TV, everywhere. The reason he was talking to these designers, he says, they're so ugly. And here's your chance to make them attractive. And I think that, you know, that plea to designers was heeded. In fact, certainly Jobs did a lot to make computing a lot more attractive. But now there's computers embedded in everything. So, you know, anything can be a computer. My microphone is probably a computer these days. 8888 Ask Leo. So that's what we talk about. Things with chips in them. The Internet of Things, sometimes they call it, where you have a watch, some glasses, your car, all connected to the Internet. 8888 Ask Leo. Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, is taking the calls. Who should I start the program with this week?
Shall we start right at the top?
Right at the tap. Roseanne.
Roseanne in L.A.
In L.A. Hi, Roseanne. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, wait a minute. Now no. I can talk to you. Hi, Roseanne. Go ahead.
Hi, Leo. Leo, I'm a longtime T-Mobile customer with an AT&T landline. I want to get rid of the landline, upgrade to more minutes with the cell phone. AT&T offered me a free cell phone, very basic. I don't do any texting or anything, but with a 2-year contract. On the other hand, T-Mobile, I would have to pay for a new phone.
Right.
But they would give me all kinds of, they would finance a phone, and it'd also be a lot of data, since I don't really know too much about the data. It sounded good, but the phones, they're so expensive, and
right.
and I have an old LG flip phone. Oh,
they're expensive anyway. If you're getting a smartphone, whether you get it cheap, like a $50 Moto X from AT&T or a $300 Moto X from T-Mobile, really the price is just hidden.
Right.
Because AT&T says, yeah, but you got to give us 2 years of your life. And if you by any chance should decide to quit AT&T at any time, you're going to give them an early termination fee that in effect covers the cost of that phone. So really, they seem expensive, but when you get a subsidized phone, you're in effect just financing it. And that's why T-Mobile said, we want to be the uncarrier. We don't want to make people locked in for 2 years. We don't want early termination. But they understand that the $700 for a phone seems an awful lot of money. So they offer financing that, in effect, it's just the same thing. Maybe it's a little bit more upfront about the long-term cost. The idea is the same. What I always tell people now, and by the way, I don't have a home line either.
Right.
I use, because everybody in the family has a smartphone, so we've all got phones. And I even bought, now this I'm not recommending, it's kooky. I bought it more for novelty. But I bought an old Western Electric telephone, the kind the phone company used to give you. But it was modified in the guts to have a little computer in it. It's got a T-Mobile SIM in it. It is our home phone, rings, it's got a dial.
Right.
But it's the home phone, and it's the number we give out as the home number, but it's on T-Mobile. Now, the only negative on that, I mean, these things work when the power goes out. They don't work when the cellular network goes out, obviously.
Right.
And but they do work when the power goes out. The only negative is 911.
Yeah.
With a landline, of course, 911 goes, you know, you make a call and you go, help me, and then pass out. They still know where you are because the landline says that. The phone, the government has made these E911 regulations, and the cell phone does have somewhat of that capability, but because you're mobile with a cell phone, you could be anywhere. What I suggest you do, and you can do this, is register that cell phone, the home address of that cell phone.
Oh, I see.
And the 911 call generally on these goes to a regional center, not to your local fire department or police department. It goes to a regional center. I don't have experience, unfortunately, knock on wood, haven't had to use it yet. I mean, if anybody's listening that does have experience on how this E911 works compared to landline 911, I'd love to hear about it. My sense is, you know, and I think early responders say it's not as good, So that's one thing to consider, but I don't think it's, it's imperfect, but I don't think it's completely, you know, I think it works. Now you have to decide on a phone. Do you want a phone with data? Do you want a smartphone?
I guess it seemed I didn't. I don't text. I just use the phone to make phone calls, and I like a nice camera.
As soon as you say camera,
I know
you're saying smartphone.
I know, because I am a hobbyist photographer. I have a Nikon camera already, but having a device that has a phone with you all the time is definitely very attractive.
I agree, and I think you would find if you got a smartphone that you'd start using it more. You would start texting. You would use the internet. You'd be sitting in a movie theater going, "What was he? He was in something else." And then you can literally get that answer in seconds on your phone.
I know.
So you'll be amazed, frankly, at how much you will end up using it. So I think plan for the future.
Okay.
First thing, though, to figure out is, and this is the most important, in your home, who has the best wireless signal? You're in Los Angeles. I would imagine you'd have a good choice that all four carriers would be okay.
Right, right. And I've been with T-Mobile for a long time.
Occasionally. Oh, all right. So you already have
I have a T-Mobile phone, and that's why, yes, and there's no contract. Right.
Maybe you want to stay with T-Mobile, and you're just going to have to bite the bullet on the cost of the phone. But as I pointed out, you're paying it anyway.
Right.
Hang on a second. I want to help you because this is, I think, not an unusual problem. Our home theater guy's coming up. We're going to talk to him in a moment, too. Scott Wilkinson. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let me take you to gazelle.com. I know you want that new iPad mini with red. I wonder what I could get for my old iPad mini. Let's check Gazelle. What do you say? What?
No, I'm just laughing because I did that last night. Gazelle!
Yeah. Now, if you were smart, you did this before they announced the iPad. But let's just see. iPad mini. AT&T. 64 gigs. Well, you know what?
Hey,
I'll take it. Gets me most of the way towards the new iPad mini. Now, if it's in flawless condition, they'll give you a little bit more. But don't worry, because even if you say it's broken, they'll give you something for it. $50 for a broken iPad mini. Gazelle, they buy iPhones. Oh, are you going to do your 4S there?
Yeah.
What's your 4S? Tell me what your 4S is.
It was like 130.
At Verizon?
Oh, AT&T.
AT&T.
I think I only got 16 gigs.
16 gigs. All right, let's just see. Hey, $130.
You know, I think
that's
Kim's
a good deal.
Still on a three, so I'll just give her mine.
Give her yours. But then, this is what you do. This is a way of recycling where you don't have to give it to a friend. You get cash for a lot of different products. iPods, tablets, even a Microsoft Surface, a Google
they'll take that.
Nexus 7. Yeah. They'll buy anything. And here's the deal. They pay the postage on anything worth more than $1. You get 30 days to take advantage of it. You're locked in at that price for 30 days. They'll wipe the data if you forget to. They'll send you a check, a PayPal, or if you use Amazon, I suggest you get the Amazon gift card because they bump it 5%.
Oh.
Gazelle is amazing. They have paid out now over $100 million to over 700,000 customers. This really recycles your stuff. They sell almost everything they sell on their eBay page, so you know it's going to a good home. They recondition it and everything, and you're getting cash for it. It simplifies your life, and it means it doesn't end up in the landfill. Gazelle.com. Do it today. Scott Wilkinson shaking it up. He's our home theater guy. We'll get back to our caller and help Roseanne figure out what to do for a smartphone, her first smartphone.
Her first smartphone.
So exciting.
Yes,
but
you
never forget your first. But
no, it's true.
Let's talk home theater. And by the way, Scott calibrated my very, very, very expensive OLED TV, and I erased his calibrations. But it was nice because you were able to send me all the settings, right? I can do it all in the menu, right?
Yeah, oh yeah.
And I fixed it all, and it does look much better.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I was asking about is motion blur. Because I don't like the interpolation that some LCD TVs do. LCD TVs tend to smear with a lot of action, like football or Arnold Schwarzenegger films. So what you can do is you can say, okay, pretend instead of 30 frames or 24 frames or 60 frames a second, it's 120 frames a second or 240 frames a second. They're not getting that much data, so they have to, what we call interpolate, fake the in-between frames.
Right. They synthesize or create
these new frames in between the actual frames that are coming in.
And it gives it, it works, but it gives
it kind of a
plasticky look.
Yeah. But many people call this the soap opera effect because it makes movies in particular look like they were shot on video, like they were shot like a soap opera is.
And I come into people's houses all the time. I sneak in and I turn that off. Every time I see it on somebody's TV, it burns my eyes and I go, no! But fortunately, I've learned now, because every company hides it under a different name, but I've learned you can go in and in most cases you can turn that off. And I think you get a better result, frankly.
Generally speaking, that's true.
I was surprised the OLED had it because I thought the OLED response time was so fast that it didn't have the same issues.
No, it does because OLED, like LCD, is what's called a sample and hold display technology, which basically means that the image of each frame stays on the screen for the entire duration of the frame.
The image of the frame stays on the screen. Okay. So what does it do on a regular TV, like a plasma or a CRT?
Well, a plasma is different. It actually flashes the same frame on the screen up to like 10 times, which is why when you look at plasmas, you see they tout, our plasma is 600 hertz. They're trying to say that they've got a higher number than LCDs, which have 120 hertz or 240 hertz, but it's comparing apples to oranges. It's not the same thing.
Right.
Plasmas are not synthesizing new frames. Instead, the way plasma works is it flashes the same frame on the screen 10 times. So at 60 frames per second, that's 600 hertz.
Wow, that's interesting.
And so they go,
look. I didn't know that.
Yeah, exactly. But it's not the same. They're trying to compete with LCDs. And frankly, between you and me, plasmas, now that Panasonic's out of the game, I think Samsung and LG will soon follow. It'll be interesting to see at CES if there are any new plasmas at all.
Wow.
So,
but the reason I mention OLED, right now it's prohibitively expensive, but I think that is LCD is clearly dominant.
It is.
Nobody buys CRT anymore. Plasmas seem to be going by the wayside, but I think OLED has promise for the future, and more and more in the years to come, we'll see more and more OLED TVs. So I think it's of interest to see, where it exceeds LED and where it doesn't.
Right, and it certainly exceeds LED and LCD in terms of black level. You get these beautiful, deep, inky blacks. Color rendition can be wonderful. Off-axis performance, you go off to the side, it doesn't fade and become a problem like LCD TVs. But it still uses this sample and hold basic technology, which leads to motion blur.
So it puts a picture up on now, this is all happening way too fast for the eye to see, but it puts a picture up on the screen and just sits there on that until the next frame is ready.
Right.
And then it shows. See, I always thought that's how it works. Isn't that how, I mean.
That's not how plasma works.
Right. I didn't realize that. And of course, I guess what we compare it to is movies.
Right.
The old film movies. And nowadays, you go to a movie, you're seeing a DLP a lot of times.
Seeing digital.
But the old film movies, that was 24 frames a second. And the frame was just on for briefly as it went through the sprocket. And then
actually, what happened in the movie theaters was they noted that 24 frames per second was chosen because it's really sort of the slowest frame rate that can still sort of look like smooth motion.
And thanks to the eyeball's persistence of vision,
you
see the flash of the frame, but it stays there until the next frame, and it looks like it's smooth motion, or no?
Except no, because what happened was they realized that 24 frames did kind of look stuttery, at least to some people.
Yeah.
So what they did was they instituted a thing called double flashing and triple flashing.
They're doing the same thing.
They're doing the same thing. They're showing the same frame on the screen two or three times in the case of 24. And by the way, when you go to a digital movie, you're still seeing 24 frames per second. All movies are shot at that frame rate, except The Hobbit, which Peter Jackson shot at 48. And some people complained it looked like video.
Right.
So there's still a lot to be worked out in terms of higher frame rates. I believe in higher frame rates. I think we need them because it will create much smoother, much sharper motion. But movies now do the same thing. They do double and triple flashing, just like LCDs do double flashing. And in the case of LCDs and OLEDs,
They can, in fact, synthesize or interpolate new frames in between those existing frames that come in, which make the motion sharper, as you say, but it also makes it look kind of plasticky.
I don't like it. I turn it off, but maybe I'm making a mistake. Am I making a mistake?
Well, no, you're not making a mistake. A lot of people turn it off. Now, you noticed, you were very, very observant. You noticed that when I sent you the settings for your TV, that I had, in fact, kept motion, what's called auto motion plus frame interpolation, what Samsung calls it. I had Robert Heron and I had kept it on, and you went, "What's the deal?"
Yeah, I thought I didn't need that on an OLED, and in fact, I had turned it off.
Yeah, well, we turned it on, sort of. Actually,
so there's
Samsung,
two settings: there's blur and there's jitter,
judder, J-U-D-D-E-R, judder. Okay. Yes, there's two settings. Yeah. One of them affects film, that is 24 frames per second, and one of them affects video, which is 30 or 60 frames per second.
But wait a minute, it's a TV. It's all video. How does it even know what's film?
Well, because when film comes in at 24 frames per second, many TVs these days can display it at 24 or 48 frames.
But who's doing that? The cable isn't doing that, right? It's all,
no.
It's all 30
well,
frames.
Well, the cable is. Cable is sending everything at typically interlaced, so it's sending 60 interlaced fields per second. And you have to do a weird mathematical thing to get 24 frames per second into a video signal. And so the TV recognizes that and starts doing its interpolation thing, and it looks like plastic.
So wait a minute. I still don't understand. Is my cable company sending information that says this should be displayed at 24 frames?
No. TV is recognizing what's called the cadence.
The TV knows.
Yes, the TV
And is
knows.
This true on Blu-ray? Is same thing?
No, Blu-ray movies are stored at 24 progressive frames per second. So there's none of this mathematical hocus pocus to get 24 frames per second into a video signal.
So when I play a Blu-ray movie into my OLED TV, it actually says, 24 frames a second.
Yep. And if it does say that, or if it gets this weird mathematical hocus pocus from the cable company that sort of tells the TV, well, this is coming in at a video frame rate, but it's really a movie shot at 24 frames per second, it will apply the de-judder part of the Samsung frame interpolation. And if it gets true video, it will apply the de-blur. So what Robert and I did was we set de-judder.
So judder is for 24 frame content.
Right.
Blur
right.
is for 30 frame content.
Yep.
All right.
Exactly.
Now we've run out of time, so I'm never going to know the right answer. Hang on, okay? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Thank you, Roseanne, for putting up with a little video interpolation there. But we're back to your fundamental question, which I think is fascinating. Never had a smartphone, always had a feature phone. You would like to jump into the 21st century by not only getting a new phone, but making it your only phone, your home phone.
Yes.
And you're on T-Mobile, so I would – here's one option for you. And,
yes.
And I understand you're seeing some sticker shock on these new phones.
Yes.
But understand also that that's what they carefully hide from you when they subsidize a phone, but you're still paying that price.
Right, right.
So what T-Mobile's doing, I think, is interesting. Now, what you could do, does $400 too much for a phone for you? I know $700 is.
I guess four is a little more doable. Obviously, I'm kind of getting used to it because...
You hear it over and over again.
I know. I'm seeing it because I'm on their website, and you read customer reviews, and you think, even at $400, people don't like it. Therefore, it gets really, really difficult.
Here's one I'm going to recommend that like a lot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I'm going to recommend you get it directly from Google because for some reason, T-Mobile's charging more for it. And this is the next... You might have seen the reviews of the Nexus 5. This just came out last week. It's a pure Android phone. That means there is no carrier stuff on it and there's no manufacturer stuff on it. It is just pure Android, which I think is a very good choice for you.
Okay.
The Nexus 5 is a beautiful phone. It's big. It's 5 inches.
It's on their website.
It is, right, but I don't want you to get it from T-Mobile because it's too expensive. They overcharge for it.
Okay.
You can go to the Google site. Now, they have limited availability right now. The only one you could get right now is the $400 32-gigabyte white. But if you want to save money, for $350, you can get the 16 gig. You just have to wait a few weeks.
Right.
And you can get in black or white. Get it. Go to play.google.com, click devices. If you buy it directly from Google, you can still use it with T-Mobile. You just bring it down to the T-Mobile store and you say, activate this, baby.
Right.
And you can choose your plan, and they have plans as low as 30. If you don't do a lot of – now, see, for the geeks, we like the $30 a month plan that has very few minutes but a lot of data. You're going to want to go the other way.
I'm going the other way because I can upgrade it to like $10 more for 50, and I get unlimited minutes. I don't have to be worrying about, oh, my God, I'm going to go over.
Having unlimited minutes is fabulous.
Yes.
It really is a change from, you and I are old enough to remember when long distance calling was so expensive that you would call, when you called somebody long distance, you'd say right up front, I'm calling long distance, let's make this short. Now we don't care. Somebody gives you a Florida area code, you don't go, oh, that's long. You just say, yeah, fine.
Right, exactly.
So that's a big change, and I think if you include that, now, free long distance in the overall cost of the phone, it's not quite as painful as it was.
Exactly.
So I would look at, this is one relatively affordable way. When you, at $350 for the Nexus 5, you're not only, it's a no compromise phone, by the way, an excellent camera.
Oh, good. Okay.
Love the camera. Mm-hmm. You'll kind of be entering the Google services world, but that's okay.
I'm not keen on Google and all their privacy issues.
People make a big deal about that, but you know that your internet service provider knows more about you than Google does.
I think so. You're right.
And they give more information more freely to the feds and the marketers than Google does. Google at least has a privacy policy. They're very clear about what they do. They give you control about what they know. And in return for giving up some of this privacy, you get really good services. The calendar services, the address book, Google Voice, which is a free phone service that's really good.
Mm-hmm.
And these Google phones, I mean, for instance, you'll make a Google account. You'll have to have a Gmail account really to use this phone. And
it's okay.
It's okay.
I know.
I don't think that they're malicious. I really don't.
Okay.
I understand Facebook. People are a little more nervous about. I understand, and you should be really more nervous about your internet service provider than anybody because they see everything.
Right.
But Google is very clear about what your trade-offs are. And they need to be because people have this reaction. So they tell you, here's what we collect. Here's what we know. If you go to google.com/dashboard, you'll see everything, and you can control it quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
And now one of the things you'll get is Google Plus, which is their social network. All of the pictures you take are automatically uploaded privately. So they're backed up immediately to Google Plus. Mm-hmm. You can share them with people from there. They have some very nice photo editing features I think you'll really like.
Right, I see.
So a lot of times people say, oh, I got to upload it to, you know, Flickr and then share it from there and blah, blah, blah. Google does it all for you. And I understand I understand your privacy concerns.
Thank you.
But if you're carrying a smartphone, forget it. It's over.
Exactly.
I think because Google's upfront about what they're doing. Google's business is selling advertising.
Right.
Google is furious about the government spying and is doing everything, much more so than any other company, especially your internet service provider, to keep the government out of your stuff. They're working very hard to do that. And they are very upfront about, this is what we use. We don't take personal data for advertising. We use it in aggregate. You will see ads in certain Google products. You will not see ads on your phone. And I think that they offer a very nice package, and I think this Nexus 5. What you should probably do is go to the T-Mobile store and look at it.
Right.
And look at their other phones. I like the Moto X as well. I think that's an excellent phone. But I'm in favor of the Nexus 5, especially because it's $350. That's as low a price as you're going to get for a late model smartphone.
Absolutely. And of course, the thing is that I'm just wondering, I have to ask T-Mobile, the fact is that they will finance the phone and with no contract. If I buy it on my own, I have to wonder,
No, they won't finance it. You're going to do it out front. But, you know, you pay for financing, so it's up to you. That's why the T-Mobile phones are a little more expensive.
Right, right.
So it's good to know that the out the door, you pay cold, hard American dollars out the door, it's $350 to Google,
and you're done.
And so compare. Now you can compare, okay, 16 gigabytes, $350 at Google. How much do you want for it, T-Mobile? And I think they want $400 or more.
$449 right here.
So it's $100 more.
It's a lot, yes.
I mean, there's no such thing as a free lunch.
No, you're right.
Especially when it comes to the phone companies, because they get you coming and going, because they're going to get a monthly fee out of you too. So I say, buy it from Google, bring it to T-Mobile. I did this. They're not going to go, oh, you didn't buy it from us. No, they're happy. They're thrilled to have you. They'll give you a new SIM. They'll put it in there. They'll activate it. You got the same number that you had before.
Yes.
You'll be carrying it home. Ask them about E911. Make sure you register your home address.
Okay.
Because I asked on the air, a number of people have said in the chat room they've had very good experiences. The 911 services through a cell phone, they responded. One guy said they responded within 5 minutes.
Okay.
You know, I think it's what I use for a home phone. And I'm pretty happy with it. And if T-Mobile's been working for you, then you know it's a good carrier for where you are.
Yes, it has been. And I know they want to keep me. And the idea of not having a 2-year contract is very attractive.
Love that.
Yes.
Love that. Do you travel internationally?
Not really, not a lot. No.
That's a big expense for me because I do every year go overseas. And T-Mobile's free international roaming.
So that would be good because I do want to travel. Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, if you're going to France, free international roaming.
Fantastic.
Bada bing, bada boom.
Bada boom. Okay.
Roseanne, let me know how it works out for you, will you?
Thank you, Leo. It's such a pleasure to talk to you. I appreciate your wisdom.
Oh, thank you. And yeah, I don't think there's any. People fear Google. They fear what Google's doing with your information. What they're doing is not nefarious. It's very straightforward. They're selling advertising, and so you'll get some ads that are targeted at your interests, and mostly in Gmail. I don't think that's so bad, frankly. They're very angry about what the government's doing, and they've started encrypting all the data that's transmitted in between Google servers. The government was tapping into that. When Google found out about that 2 weeks ago, two Google engineers and Eric Schmidt, the chairman of the board, both uttered expletives I can't say on the radio. And said, we're fixing that. They have a transparency report in which they say everything they're allowed to say. You know, the U.S. government prevents them from actually telling people what the government's asking for. But they will tell, go to the transparency report for Google. You'll see what governments are asking for, what information, how much Google complies, how much it doesn't. It does what it has to do legally, but it fights it as much as it can. I think Google is one of the good guys in this. If you want privacy, don't get on the internet. Don't have a smartphone. But it's a good idea to do this with eyes open, know what I'm trading, what benefits I'm getting for what I'm giving them. And if you can live with that, I think it's a good deal. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy, hour number two of the Tech Guy radio program. Phone number is 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. You give us a ring. We can walk you through your first smartphone purchase and more. 888-827-5536. Computers, the internet. We spend a lot of time talking about smartphones, tablets, of course, these days. Anything on your mind, I'd love to hear from you. I have the iPad mini with Retina. Got it, ran out and got it on Tuesday when Apple released it. Sent Glenn Rubenstein and our staff. I sent him up to get it. I said, Glenn, I've ordered it. Go get it. And very impressed. Very impressed. I think probably if you have the original iPad mini and you're a fan of it, it'd be worth considering. It's the same size, but it is much faster, noticeably faster. And that screen, I love having a high-res screen. In fact, really now, I think we're all spoiled a little bit, at least those of us on the leading and bleeding edge of geekdom, by our phones and tablets now all have super high-res displays. Apple calls it Retina, but that's a marketing term that Apple uses. But the idea is that if the display is high enough resolution that you can't see the dots at normal operating distance, that's what Apple calls retina. And you don't want to see the dots, but it's more than just seeing the dots. I think the thing that really, where it really makes a difference is when you're looking at text. And if you use a tablet as a reader, as an ebook reader, if you use the Kindle software or Apple's iBook software, and you're looking at books, that's where you'll really notice it. And it's not so much that you can or can't see the dots. It's with something called subpixel rendering. Oh, boy. The idea is if I have enough dots, more dots than I need to render the text, you know, the most primitive way to do it and the way computers did it for years was just on or off, right? There's a black dot or a white dot, and you drew text by a bunch of black dots, and if the dots are small, the text looks fairly crisp. But subpixel rendering means going a little farther and using those dots, those extra dots, the dots that are, you know, don't really need those dots for the drawing of the letter, to do a smoothing of the text using grays and light grays as well as blacks. And what you get is a much crisper, much more readable image, an image that is akin to that on the printed page. That's what we're going for, right? If you use a laser printer, really, it's only 300 dots per inch on a laser printer. That's, you know, a normal laser printer, 300 DPI. That goes way back to the earliest days of laser printing when it was deemed good enough. That's the original retina. If it's 300 DPI, then when you're reading a page, you won't see any dots. And it's true. Look at your laser printed page or even your printed book, and it's good. You don't see any. You see the dots making up the text. You see crisp text. Well, our devices are far more now than 300 dots per inch. The Mini with Retina display, I think, is 426 dots per inch, something like that. Much more, 50% more, almost. That means that not only can be as crisp as the text on the written page, on the laser printed page, but even better. Microsoft calls theirs ClearType. That's right, Jay's been in the chat room. And it's the same idea, subpixel rendering. And I think really that if that's the one big difference in the last year's iPad mini and this year's iPad mini, yes, it's faster, et cetera. I really like the size. Yes, I know the new iPad Air is 0.4 pounds smaller and is lighter rather, and is smaller on, you know, in terms of measurements. But it's still to me a little big to carry around or hold. I just like the mini. I really do. I liked it since the day it came out. I think it is the best-selling iPad. My Nexus 5, the phone we were talking about earlier, the phone we were recommending Roseanne by, Brian W. is pointing out, it's 441 dots per inch. Wow. So we're getting used to that. I think that's the expectation. And again, it doesn't probably make a difference on most of the stuff you do, except when you look at text, that having crisp text like that makes such a difference. Such a difference. And as Tim Elliott's pointing out in the chat room, that for years, computer displays, the kind of the standard was 72 dots per inch. Oh, you can see the pixels on that. Crisp is better. And whether you get the full-size iPad Air or the iPad Mini with Retina, I think you're going to really see the benefit. Nexus 7 tablet from Google, also very high res. The Galaxy Note tablets, also very high res. And these higher resolutions, I think, make a tablet much more usable than you would think. You don't notice immediately, but over the long term, I think you really do. 8888, Ask Leo. Lisa's next in Downey, California. Hi, Lisa. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great, Lisa. How are you?
Great. I love to listen to your show. Even my husband said that between 11 and 2 o'clock Saturdays and Sundays, that's my boyfriend's time.
Well, thank you. Thank your husband for letting me have you this week.
Okay, here's my situation. I got a Dell desktop computer a year ago with a 2 terabytes hard drive and 256 gigabytes SSD.
Yeah.
Supposedly, it's super fast, but I've been noticed it's like getting so slow. So I thought, okay, something is wrong. And I looked at it and found out that they assigned my SSD drive as a C drive. So virtually I'm using a computer just to have 256 gigabytes.
Right. Nothing's on the 2 terabyte spinning drive at all?
Nothing. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And I do a lot of video thing and video editing and photo. And I actually, I'm purposely do all these on my external hard drive. But I found like everything is on that SSD drive. And the other day I found that it has only like 34 gigabytes of space left.
Yeah. So what we want to do is we want to move your data.
Uh-huh.
There's a couple of ways that these SSD hybrid situations can be used. That big drive can't be used this way, but when you see a smaller 64 gig SSD in an Intel device, they're using some Intel smart technology to kind of mix between the big spinning hard drive and the smaller SSD drive to speed up everything. This is not the case with you. What you really want is, they were right to put the C drive because that's your Windows and your applications.
Uh-huh.
That's what you want in the SSD, but you want your data drive, your My Documents folder,
uh-huh,
and all that stuff, including video, audio, all that stuff, on the spinning drive, because that's where the capacity is.
Right.
So that way you get fast boot times, because Windows boots up fast application launch times and so forth. But you don't care. It's not such a critical thing how long it takes to load a document in or save a document. So what I would suggest is, and you can do this in Windows, your Windows 7 probably, yes?
Right, yeah. Right.
You can do this by getting the properties of the documents folders, and it'll show you in the advanced properties where that is stored. You can change that. I would say make that second drive be D. Is it D?
It's something like, it's D, yeah.
So I think of D for data.
Uh-huh.
And I would just say, you can tell Windows to do this, put my documents on the data, put my pictures on data, put my videos on data, put my music on data. If you put all of those drives, those data folders onto the D drive.
Okay.
Then it'll move them off, or you might have to delete them after it creates. I can't remember if it moves it. It probably creates a new one. So you'll want to move everything over, and then you can get rid of those data files on your C drive. C should just be for Windows and applications. Everything else should.
Remember, I used to have an HP, and they did a partition, and they
Same way. Hey, we're out of time, but thank you, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Number one song for Mondegreens. You know what a Mondegreen is, right?
I forget how to describe it, but my mom always thought that song, Billy, Don't Be a Hero, was Felix, Don't Be a Hero. And I'm like, who would write a song about a fella named Felix?
A Mondegreen is where you mishear a word in a lyric.
Well, my favorite is Excuse Me While I Kiss This Guy.
Exactly. And Blinded by the Light is a good candidate for Mondegreens. That's mostly because Bruce Springsteen's kind of...
Can't sing.
Mushmouthed. That was Manfred Mann in his Earth Band's version.
Right.
Though, yeah. Boy, now you could tell I was a DJ in an earlier life. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, as was Heather Hammond, the phone ranger.
Right.
We're just a couple of DJs talking radio. So let me explain what's going on, with our last caller's hard drive. There is an issue that happens with solid-state drives. By the way, it happens on... anywhere where you have flash memory. So this can also happen on your smartphone, on your tablet. It happened very noticeably on Google's Nexus 7 tablet from last year. And it's because of the way flash drives work. They do something called wear leveling. You know, a flash drive is really just a bunch of, memory storage. And when you write data to a flash drive, it's written just randomly whenever there's a free cell. But the problem is, you can thrash a flash by writing and writing and writing to the same cells. The cells wear out fast. So flash drives implement something called wear leveling that makes all the cells be used evenly. Unfortunately, and it's I've tried to explain this before, and never satisfactorily. The SSD can slow down over time. Because of the way it handles deletes and formats. you don't need to know why, and it's hard for me to describe why. It has to do with something called garbage collection. Just let's put it this way. Modern operating systems and modern flash drives support something called trim. Trim is really important. Using trim really can keep this speed of the drive from slowing down. If trim is not enabled on a flash drive, over time the flash drive can get sluggish. Now, there's a lot of debate over how big an impact it will have. In fact, I remember talking to Intel engineers, Intel, which for years made the best solid-state drives, and two guys from the Intel SSD division debating with me, saying, nah, it doesn't make a difference. Yes, it makes a difference. It can make a noticeable difference. Over time, flash drives can get slow unless this trim command is implemented both by the drive and the operating system. Now, here's the good news. You have a late model Dell. It's almost certainly enabled on the drive itself, on the drive's controller. And Windows 7 does support trim. But occasionally, Windows 7 will be misconfigured. And so our caller said that she noticed it was slowing down. Lisa said it's slowing down a little bit. And it could be this. So I've put a link in the show notes to an article from Lifehacker. It involves a command line prompt. You're going to be using something called fsutil, the file system utility. And the command line prompt is fsutil space behavior space query space, and then one word, disable delete notify. If it's zero, that's good. If it's one, that's bad. And if it's zero, that means trim is turned off. You can turn it on by setting that to zero. It's complicated. I'm just going to give you a link on techguylabs.com so you can they describe it quite well. So, Lisa, that's one thing I would make sure. I would, you know, click start, run, and then type in this fsutil query just to see. Actually, you probably want to open a command window. So start, run, cmd, return, and then type this in just to see. But most likely it's slowing down because it's full. So merely moving your data directories off the C drive onto the D drive, this is how I recommend people set up computers anyway. It's great to have the operating system and applications on one drive, data on another drive. It keeps everything separate. If you have to reinstall the operating system, it doesn't touch the data, et cetera, et cetera. So I recommend that you do that at least. And I bet you that'll fix the problem. Boy, that was a long explanation for really no real reason. Sorry about that. Scott's coming up in just a bit in North Edwards, California. He wants to know about the Chromebook recall. Yeah, a bunch of HP Chromebooks have been recalled. I'll tell you why. And whether that means it's the end of the line for Chromebooks in just a minute. But Scott in North Edwards, California. Hi, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
How you doing, man?
I'm great.
Good, man. I listen to your show, and it's just mind-boggling. Every week you offer new hardware and new...
It's a little out of control this year. I think this is the worst year ever for new stuff.
Yeah, well, I have a dumb phone. I got rid of my smartphone because it just costs too much money, and I can't keep up with the battery charging part of it. But anyways, this Google Chromebook. I was listening last week. You recommended some guy called in about the Chromebook, and he wanted something just to get on the internet and do something. And now I heard this. I went to go buy one, and now this Chromebook recall deal, is it a true thing?
It's not a big deal. It's this is not unusual. Sometimes this happens. These were the HP Chromebooks in specific. Their power supplies overheated, and there's some concern when power supplies overheat. You might be a little bit worried about a fire. So rather than take any chances, I don't think it's a significant issue. They just recalled them.
Is there other Chromebooks? I don't know. I mean, I'm...
Oh, yeah, there are many manufacturers. Google makes one that's too expensive. I don't recommend. But Samsung and Acer both have Chromebooks under $300. The idea of a Chromebook is it's a very inexpensive, very simple computer. It doesn't have doesn't feel like a full operating system. It's basically the Chrome browser and applications that can run within the Chrome browser. But for most people, that's everything. That's your email. That's browsing the web. It can be photo editing. It can be a lot of the things that you would do normally with a computer. And it has the advantage it's totally secure. You can't really screw it up. Most of your data is stored in the cloud, so you don't have to worry about backup. I think it's a good choice for a lot of people. To Johnny Jetville. Johnny Jet is our travel guru. shows us every week how to use technology to save money and make traveling more fun. Hey, Johnny.
How you doing, Leo?
Are you in a padded room today?
You know, people think I'm crazy, but I'm actually in a destination, which I think you're going to be able to guess.
Oh, it's a pretty, okay, so that was the padded bed, and I'm looking out the window, and it looks like Las Vegas, Nevada. You're at the Aria Hotel, ladies and gentlemen.
How'd you know I was at the Aria?
Well, I recognize the bed.
And guess who's behind me?
Should I know? Your father.
Yeah, his 85th birthday is today.
He looks like he's napping.
Yes, he is.
Don't show your father napping on the Skype. Fortunately, we're on the radio. Nobody can see the picture I'm seeing. But
I told him I'd take him anywhere in the world for his birthday.
Actually,
he chose Las Vegas.
And he's having a blast because I've seen some of the pictures.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just went to breakfast.
We're in line for the buffet, and he's like, I'm not that hungry. And then I just posted a picture of both his plates. I'm like, man, I hate to see what you look like when you're hungry.
What a nice thing to do for your dad's 85th. That's so great. He's having a fun time.
Oh, yeah. And the hotel here, you know, they found out we're here, and they sent up this incredible birthday cake.
I mean, the Aria. I think it's one of the more modern hotels in Vegas.
And it's so tech-friendly. I mean, you can control everything right from the bed.
Yeah.
Curtains, everything you got.
One of our listeners does the tech there in the room, in-room tech.
Oh, he does?
Yeah. And it is a geek heaven.
Big time.
Yeah.
Big time. I love it. It's actually, I think it's the ninth largest hotel in the world. Actually, I wrote it down. Ninth or 11th largest hotel in the world.
Wow.
It's the 11th largest hotel in the world with 4,400 rooms.
I think
4,004 rooms.
MGM Grand had 5,000.
Yeah,
MGM
Grand, I think, is the largest hotel in the world.
That's too big.
But there's one in Macau is the biggest building,
yeah.
The Venetian. But anyway.
Well, it's a beautiful hotel. I'm glad you're having a good time. And
it really
now
is.
You've raised the bar. I'm going to have to do this for my dad's 85th.
Well, we came here for my dad's 70th, and we haven't really been back.
It's about
time. I said, wherever you want to go. And he doesn't even recognize the place. He's like, oh, God.
Oh, no. Vegas changes every few years.
Every year.
Basically, they blow up all the hotels and start over.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so he's just amazed, and we're having a good time. So anyway, but I was just looking at some flight deals. I just got an email alert for New York to Sweden. Forget this, $400 round trip, including all taxes and fees.
Now, how do you find out about stuff like, because that's awesome.
You got to sign up to JohnnyJet.com.
I love Sweden. So Johnny Jet.
I sign up to every single email newsletter.
And then you digest these and send them out?
Yeah, or I'll tweet it. I'll tweet this one right when I get off. I just saw it just now.
At Johnny Jet on Twitter.
Yeah, actually, I got this one from theflightdeal.com, which is, I think I mentioned it last a couple few times ago, but it's a great website. But $400, it's on Norwegian Airways.
I don't even know. I never heard of them.
They're new, and they're taking over the world.
Really?
They really are. Yep, they're going to be taking over the world.
Have you flown them yet?
Nope. But, and they have free Wi-Fi, I heard.
I like that.
I was really
surprised that neither Lufthansa nor British Airways had on our transatlantic flight had free Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi. I thought everybody had Wi-Fi now.
But Lufthansa should have had some.
They invented it. I remember they were the first airline, Lufthansa and SAS.
Because I was on SAS a long time ago.
2005. I know.
Yep.
It was wild.
They were like, you're calling from the plane? I'm like, yeah. And it's free. Or $36, I think it cost.
Yeah, it's not free. But, hey, if you're stuck on a plane for 12 hours, it's worth it, believe me, to have Wi-Fi.
Sure. Especially, this airline, you got to watch for these guys. I mean,
Norwegian Airways. All right.
I think it's just called Norwegian, or it's Norwegian Air Shuttle or something like that. But they are, they just started flying. Now they're flying London to LA, I think, London for Lauderdale, New York, and they have really cheap deals. I put it in my newsletter a few months ago when they announced it. And again, it was like $200 each way. And this is even from the West Coast. Or 240, something ridiculous.
You know, a company is branding themselves that way when their web page title is "Cheap Flights to Oslo, Stockholm, and Copenhagen." So
yeah,
they want to be known as the low cost airline.
But it's not just to Scandinavia. They now are going to be flying out of Gatwick in London.
I've noticed though that airfares have gone up dramatically, and I think it's because of the cost of fuel, isn't it? In fact, some airlines are now charging fuel surcharges.
Well, a lot have already been charging fuel surcharges. Actually, fuel has gone down.
Give them the they're never going backwards.
British Airways is known for charging. They have a big. I love British Airways, but they have a big fuel charge, which I don't agree with.
Yeah, because they hide it. I mean, the ticket price does not include is not the total price.
Correct. So
wasn't there
way
a recent
to get around it?
Yeah.
I was going to say, if you're going to use your miles, especially like American Airlines miles, which you can use on British Airways, or you know, British Airways Avios miles are even worth more. So what people do is, instead of booking it on British Airways, they book it on American, and that way they can save on that. It's like $500-$600 for the
same flight.
Same flight. Actually, well, you'll go on the partner carrier. You'd go on American.
Okay.
So, right.
What else you got for us? What other amazing technologies can we apply to our travels?
All right. Well, you know, while you're away, I had a note. Twitter and the U.S. government partnered up, and they have Twitter alerts. So if you go to twitter.com/travelgov,
TRAVELGOV.
Yep, and slash again alerts, and you'll get to it.
Wow! So this is from the State Department.
This is from the State Department.
And you could subscribe to these, or
yep, and you register your phone number online with these guys.
Oh, this is good.
And so what they'll do? Actually, I signed up for it, but I haven't got anything. I think
because everything's fine.
Yeah, I guess that's a good.
But
thing.
It says during a crisis or emergency, travel State Department will send you a Twitter alert.
Yes. So, and actually when they pretty much launched it, the government then, like a couple of days later, you know, shut down for, you know,
yeah, they were busy doing
it. Yeah.
Doing other things. But yeah, so if you're like on your way to Cairo, it'd probably be a good idea to know how things are going. I know they shut down briefly. They shut down travel to Egypt because of instability in the region. So yeah. that would be a good thing to know. All right. I'm signing up for it right now.
Good. Yeah. So I signed up for it. I think it's cool because it will push it to your timeline, and it will also send you, I think it will send you an SMS.
It alerts you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so very cool. I like that.
I love that.
Yeah.
What else I got for you? How much time we got?
You got a minute, too. I don't want to wake up Dad.
No, he took his hearing aid out.
Ah, so he can't hear a thing. Sleeping like a baby.
The guy is the nicest guy. I mean, we're walking down the hallway, and he says hello to everyone walking by.
It's so neat that you and your dad get along like that, and that you take – you know, his father, very, very well-known prosecutor, right, for a long time.
Trial lawyer. He was the other side.
He was defender. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, but they – and he's back in work now because he has a cochlear implant.
That's really cool.
And that's the best technology available right now.
Cochlear implants are amazing. They basically attach a computer – to the nerve endings in your ear, and the computer receives the sound, generates the appropriate signals to the nerve endings, and people who've been deaf all their lives can hear all of a sudden. It's a truly remarkable technology.
It's changed his life. I mean, the other day we're sitting there by the beach, and he's like, I can hear the birds and the waves and stuff that we take for granted. You know, I get emotional thinking about it because it's changed his life.
If you do a search on YouTube for cochlear implant, you'll find some pretty amazing videos of people hearing for the first time or the first time in a long time.
I saw one.
Yeah, and they're just wow.
Yeah,
they're tearjerkers.
It really is.
It's an amazing technology. Well, Johnny Jett, always a pleasure. JohnnyJett.com is the website. He's got a lot of great articles in there, including, and I know you heard about this a couple of weeks ago, but that amazing story about flying on Delta with the
Fallen soldier,
and just
and I got a lot of emails from your fans saying thank you about that. So thank you for letting me talk about it.
It was really great. Yeah,
it was big. But I have one quick plug. I have a contest going for 3 more days for the Longbow Key in Florida.
All right.
So check it out. It's on my homepage.
JohnnyJett.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I don't know how I missed the whole Bat Kid phenomenon. Stuff happens on the internet so fast nowadays that, you know, if you don't keep up. So Bat Kid happened this week, right?
Yeah, yesterday.
So he's a little boy. It's a make-a-wish. He's 5 years old, been suffering from leukemia since he was 1. What was his wish, Heather? Was it to be Batman
for a day and, I guess, save the city. So he saved San Francisco. Well, we called it Gotham for the day. And even our friend Kim said in her traffic reports that morning, like, if you're coming into Gotham City, the Bay Bridge is backed up to...
I mean, there were 12,000 people on the streets of San Francisco. The tech angle, of course, is they use Twitter to coordinate all of this. And his @BatKid is his Twitter handle. Hooded hero nabs Riddler, rescues damsel in distress. That was at the cable car turnaround, right?
Yeah. They tied her to the tracks.
No, really?
Kinda, yeah.
Wow.
And as you're showing, the San Francisco Chronicle had a special edition, Gotham City, Bat Kid Saves
this
the Day.
This was
It was great.
They actually printed a special edition?
I believe so. I wasn't near any newsstands yesterday to really see, but I guess you could pick it up.
Well, at Bat Kid on Twitter if you want to see all the excitement. Wow. That's pretty
like a
cool.
Massive flash mob.
sometimes the geek universe kind of all pitches in for something. President Obama made him a vine?
Yeah.
I didn't even know the president had a vine. You know what Vine is, right? It's the 6-second videos that are, you know, all the rage with kids these days. Do you have a Vine, Heather?
Yeah, I haven't used it in forever.
Do you have a Snapchat?
I never did that. I have something called ClipChat, though, which I also haven't used.
You're too old. We're too old. Anybody over 12 is too old for Snapchat. But do you know that the Facebook folks offered the founders of Snapchat, this is a iPhone and Android app that let you take a picture, send it to somebody in the Snapchat app, and the other people only have 10 seconds or less to look at it, and after which it self-destructs. So the idea is, I think kids really have taken this because they realize that stuff they post on Facebook lasts forever. Employers, colleges, others look at this, and they want more privacy. So they use Snapchat to exchange. And by the way, my kids use it. And while us adults might think it's for, you know, used for more nefarious purposes like sexting, it's fact they just send pictures, you know, silly pictures, and they don't last. It's just like, instead of a text, here's a picture. The founders of Facebook offered the 23-year-old founders of Snapchat, these kids are young, $3 billion this week to buy the company. $3 billion with a B, dollars. That's three times what they paid for Instagram. And the founders of Snapchat said, no, it's not enough. I'd take it.
Can you say billion like Dr. Evil?
$1 billion. Snapchat, and this gives you an idea of what Vine, Snapchat, Instagram are worth to companies like Facebook. Facebook understands what's going on, of course, because they have the metrics, the data, the measurement. They can see it happening. They can feel it sliding away from them. Because what happens is the young people, which are, I guess, in any social medium, the future of the social medium, if you'd only have old people like me using it, well, we're going to die, and then what? You got to get the young people. And Facebook realizes young people have moved away from Facebook to stuff like Instagram, Vine, and Snapchat. They bought Instagram for $1 billion. Twitter snapped up Vine before anybody else could get it. They Twitter was so worried about this, they bought Vine before it launched. They heard about it, and they said, we'll take it. Sight unseen. And they were right, because Vine took off like crazy. I mean, even the president has Vine now. 6-second videos. That's the point of Vine. But no one can... Snapchat? Nope. We're worth more than that. Now, of course, you understand that a company like Snapchat has investors. And these investors have put millions of dollars into Snapchat. And now, normally, investors are very anxious to get that money out, especially if they're making, you know, three or four times the amount they invested. But this is the case where it wasn't the founders, these young guys. They were frat brothers. They started this when they were frat brothers at Stanford University. They're 23. It wasn't really them who turned it down. It was their investors who said, nope, don't take it. You can do better.
I know the idea is that it's fleeting, but it seems fleeting in and of itself. Because the workaround is that you take a screenshot, right? So it doesn't disappear.
Well, but if you take a screenshot, it tells the other person you took a screenshot. You know that, right?
Well, so I still have that picture of you naked, you know?
You don't send naked pictures on. See, this is what adults think kids are doing.
Well, isn't it the point?
It's what I thought, but I've been told time and time again by younger people, no, we take pictures of us being goofy, doing stuff, And then we don't want it to live forever. It's just like a text. And we just want to send it to them. And then it goes away. I don't know.
Virtual
I don't,
peekaboo.
Look, I have no idea what's going on with Snapchat. I've used it briefly, and I just don't get it. I want my pictures to last. That's why I take a picture. It'll last longer. $3 billion. Snapchat has 350 million photos sent every month. More than 10 million photos a day are sent on Snapchat. And it is so hot that companies are bidding for it. But you're right. Teenagers are very fickle. And Snapchat could be history tomorrow, literally. Teenagers once thought Facebook was the place to be. Now they've gone to Twitter, to Instagram, to Snapchat, to Vine. Pew does this. The Pew Research Center on the Internet and American Life does a lot of studies of this kind of thing. In 2006, Pew found that 85% of teenagers, 7 years ago, 85% of teenagers had a MySpace account. You know how many?
Zero.
Practically 7%. And that's probably just leftovers.
Yeah.
So we've seen it happen. That's when Facebook took over, right? But it could happen again. And I think Facebook looks at companies like Snapchat and says, we better buy them. We better buy them until, what? Who knows, next year it could be something else. It
Either
should be, probably
them,
will be.
Or
we buy them or we're gone.
Butts
we're history.
Goodbye, yeah.
Isn't that funny? It's really interesting. I find it to turn down $3 billion. I mean, they wouldn't get all 3 billion. Maybe they'd only get 1 billion, 500 million each. They founded it 3 years ago in their dorm room, and they're now half billionaires. You would never need money again. You could do anything you wanted. You never need anything. What are you holding out for?
Really?
I'm sure I'm sure that's what Mark Zuckerberg said. What are you? I gave what? $3 billion? Can you imagine offering $3 billion for something and getting turned down? For those of you in Great Britain, that's $3,000 million. The Gem Doctor says in the chat room, you think it's that it was Facebook offering the money? That wasn't so much the $3 billion, it was that they didn't want to be owned by Facebook? Maybe. I don't know. I just feel like if the devil himself came and offered me $3 billion, I'd have to consider it. Maybe I'd say no. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. 888-825-5536. Toll free. From anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Otherwise, use Skype and you can call us. You can always reach us anywhere, anytime. We're here to help with your technology. Now, we were talking about Snapchat and that it was that the Facebook offered him $3 billion and they said no. And somebody just told me that that Google offered him $4 billion. I don't know if that's true or not. But if you're going to say no to $3 billion, you're going to say no to $4 billion. Right? What is the number? I mean, how big does an offer have to be for an internet startup that the prospects are weak? It just baffles me.
I just wonder, because someone else in the chat room pointed it out, like maybe it depends on who they care to get in bed with. You know?
No, maybe. I don't know. It doesn't... I don't know. I would hate to be Evan Spiegel and 4 years from now, he's eating in a Denny's and saying, you know, I could have had $500 million, but I turned it down. And now I'm working at the photo store down the street. And I hate to be that
guy.
Hate to be in that situation. According to The Verge, this is just a rumor. I find it hard to believe that Google did offer them $4 billion, tried to outbid them. Now, if you've got a bidding war going, now maybe there's more to this story. Maybe they're thinking somebody's going to come along and offer them $5 billion. Do I hear six? Do I hear six? Six, 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 six. Do I hear six? We're going for $6 billion. Sold to who? Who can afford more than $4 billion for an app?
I know. It's like, here, you want to buy this jar of air?
Oh, man. It's an app. Which is, by the way, why so many kids are studying iOS development in college and desperately trying to get in the marketplace. And the new thing to do, if you've got those skills, most don't, but if you've got those skills, you don't go take a job at Google or Apple or Facebook. You start a company. These guys are frat brothers. They started a company. I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm older and wiser, but I'd hate to be the guy 3 years from now says, you know, I should have taken the $4 billion. That's a lot of money. 8888 Ask Leah, what could you buy for $4 billion? I mean, seriously, that's an unbelievable amount of money. Are we in? Do you think, like, somebody in the chat room is saying, we're in that dot-com boom period, like in the late 90s. We could well be in that boom period for apps. In fact, increasingly there's evidence that apps are not as lucrative as people thought, that most of the apps that make money are in the top 1%. Most apps, 99%, don't make any money. What could you buy with $3 billion? Cake Interface says, Leo, you. That's right. You could buy me. You could buy me for half that. Lock, stock, and barrel. I'll come and I'll feed you dinner. Gordon in Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Gordon.
How you doing? You got to help me redeem myself with my two teenage boys.
Oh, no. What happened?
Well, you know, I'm getting a ton of flack about how the Wi-Fi reception is so bad in the house. So I'm running this variety.
Kids today. Used to be, Dad, how come I can't go to the mall? Now it's, why is the Wi-Fi reception so terrible in here?
I hear you. So I have Verizon DSL, and I have that modem router combo, Wi-Fi combo. Went to a local tech place, and I said, you got to get rid of that thing. Why don't you look at some of these new wireless router modem combos? So I started looking online, and they all have horrible reviews.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I think... Especially if you're... Now, it's not Fios. It's Verizon DSL, right?
Right.
Right. So what's happened both with DSL and cable modems is that you can either use the one the company leases you or you can buy one outright. I think you probably want to keep using the Verizon modem, but you might get benefits by using a Wi-Fi router instead of their built-in Wi-Fi router.
Right.
Don't get rid of the modem. It's just, I think you're going to have fewer. The modem doesn't do much except convert. You know, it says, hello, Verizon, I'm here. It's the Wi-Fi router, the Wi-Fi access point that's probably the cause of the problem. And I agree, the ones that come from the cable companies and the DSL companies are usually pretty bad. Do you know what the manufacturer is of it?
It's a model 7500. It's a little black, flat, rectangular little box.
My experience has generally been that these are not the best. I don't know that one particularly, but generally the ones you get from DSL companies are not the best. But you probably need it. It's a VersaLink.
VersaLink.
Yeah. So if you search for this, Verizon has support information. What you're going to look for is how to put the VersaLink in bridge mode. Which means I don't want you to be Wi-Fi. I just want you to be a modem. And then I'm going to attach my own Wi-Fi router and let it do all the work. I think you'd get better results that way. But you don't need to get rid of the VersaLink.
Okay. And the capacity of the Wi-Fi, I guess we have different.
The capacity of the Wi-Fi is not your limiting factor. The internet access speeds are your limiting factor.
Right.
The Wi-Fi is more than fast enough. What you're getting from Verizon. DSL is the limit. What speed are they selling you?
I did one of those speed monitor tests, and it's 4.6. I guess that's the download, and the other one's 0.65 on the upload.
Yeah, that's about right. So you're getting kind of the basic 5 megabit. Probably 5. They're probably selling you 5.1, but what you're getting is probably more accurate.
Right.
So you're never going to get faster than that. That's what you're getting from Verizon.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Wi-Fi can go much faster than that, 10 times faster than that.
Right.
But what you will get is you'll get a better Wi-Fi signal. I think probably what people are what your kids are complaining about has as much to do with the fact that they're not getting a full signal as they go across the house. Is it a how far? What's the longest distance from the Wi-Fi access point to where it might be used?
We got to go through a few rooms.
Yeah,
good, 1,200 feet.
Oh, I see. Yeah, see, so Wi-Fi is supposedly 150 feet.
Okay.
And the more walls you go through, the worse it gets, and especially if there's any metal in those walls. Older houses are worse. Newer houses where it's drywall, no problem. But if you get to lath and plaster or if you have concrete with rebar or a metal mesh in there, that'll kill the signal. So, in fact, it's weird. Windows, metal window screens will kill the signal. So it's metal that's the problem for Wi-Fi. It's RF. But drywall's not a problem, you know. So it just depends. I think if you got a better router, better wireless router on that cable, on that DSL modem, you'd probably have better results.
Okay.
And they're not very expensive. We're talking 50, 60 bucks. My favorite brands, Apple's the best, but Apple's very expensive and probably overpriced. I have good results with the Apple AirPort Extreme, which now supports the new AC, which is very fast. Of course, your receiving hardware also has to be AC. I would say Netgear's good, D-Link's good. I kind of stay away from Linksys. And if you need to, you're going to want to get a brand that has support for Wi-Fi extenders. What those are is additional Wi-Fi access points you put midway between the farthest point and your access point, and it passes a signal along, and that can really make a difference. I use a Wi-Fi extender almost always. But that needs to be the same brand as the Wi-Fi access spot. So, yeah, I think you probably could get better results using your own Wi-Fi access spot instead of Verizon's. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're talking about Wi-Fi issues. This is a very common problem now, especially if you live in an area where there are a lot of other Wi-Fi signals. And if you live in a city or you live in an apartment, there may be 10, 20, 30 Wi-Fi signals competing. And there's limited channel space for all of them. Wi-Fi, or wireless internet access, comes usually in two flavors, 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz. If you have a dual-band router, the more modern routers will do that. 2.4 is the original and is usually jammed. So I was talking with Heather Hammond here because she's got issues with Wi-Fi, and I said the first thing to do is just see if your stuff supports 5 gigahertz. Most computers do. Your laptop certainly does. And if you can, on your wireless router, go to 5 gigahertz. In a crowded area, that may improve things considerably. The downside on 5 gigahertz is it doesn't go through walls as well. So in an apartment, though, it's usually a fine choice. In fact, it's a better choice because it's blocked. The walls of the building are probably blocking other signals out at 5 gigahertz better. So you'll have better rejection, and your signals will have less interference. So that's the first thing to try. And then I recommended a program from MetaGeek. A lot of people use this. It's metageek.net. It's called Insider. And they have portable versions, but they also have home version that lets you look at what's going on. You can see all the different wireless signals, what channels they're using. There are up to 11 different channels in the U.S. for Wi-Fi, and so you want to make sure you're using a less occupied channel. That seems like 11's really more than actually, because it's really more like three channels, because you get the center channel and the two sidebands, and by the time you've used all the frequencies available to you, they're really kind of three big channel groups. And so you want to make sure you're in the channel group that's least occupied, that has the weakest nearby signals, things like that. So there's a lot you can do, and sometimes it's just moving your router around, the antennas around. As anybody who's ever worked in radio or knows about radio knows, it's a black art, this radio frequency and how it moves around and stuff. So sometimes just moving your router around can make a difference, give you incredible performance. So play with it, I guess, is the answer. Look at what you've got. Try 5 gigahertz, see if that's better. Getting a router that supports MIMO. If your devices support MIMO, your laptop, your new laptop does. Oh. Multiple in, multiple out gives you, it may be a little bit rude. There are routers that actually can kind of brute force better access at the expense of your neighbors. Having multiple antennas is one of the ways that you can do that. Because, of course, you're going to be occupying more space. That means there's less space for them. But the heck with them. You deserve better Wi-Fi. There's lots of things you can do, I think, to improve Wi-Fi. And getting a good, as much as the Apple AirPort Extremes cost, I feel like they're very well made. They're very good. They do. They also have, and this is a not insignificant issue, they don't have any major security flaws. A lot of routers do. Routers that offer that one-button connect thing, the WPS, frequently. That's flawed, and frequently you can't turn it off, even though it looks like you can. There's other routers with other major exploits in them. Since you've got the late model Air and you have 802.11ac, I think it wouldn't be a bad idea to take a look at spending a little money. I know it's expensive on the AirPort Extreme. It supports the new AC format, which has a lot of advantages.
Well, perfect. I'm going to the Apple store today anyway.
Yes, I'm just making you spend money right and left, aren't I?
I don't mind. I want everything to be like in Leo's world. Perfect, running,
it's not perfect
up to date.
In Leo's world. In fact, the more things you use, the more things can go wrong. That's the problem. Archie in Los Angeles, welcome to Leo's world. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Archie.
Sir.
What can I do for you today?
I have a MyTouch 4G slide that's ready to, I guess, go to phone cemetery. And I'm debating between the LG G2 and the Nexus 5.
They're really the same phone.
Okay.
Yeah, LG makes both of them. The Nexus 5 is slightly modified. For instance, there's no volume rocker on the back panel. But yeah, they're very similar. And of the two, I strongly prefer the Nexus 5. Because it's pure. There's no LG junk on it. There's no carrier junk on it. It's pure Android. It's the only one with KitKat. I mean, I suppose Android will be upgraded on a lot of late model phones at some point, but it's really, you're kind of at the mercy of the manufacturers and the carriers. With the Nexus phone, the Google phone, you're not. It always has the latest version of Android. And KitKat is nice. I like KitKat.
Okay.
So I would say, I can't think of any reason not to get a Nexus 5 if you're looking at those two.
Yeah, I was,
somebody in the chat room saying the camera's not as good, the battery's not as good. You know, I don't know if that's the case. I've been very happy with the camera on the Nexus 5. I have not tried the G2, so I can't give you a direct comparison.
And other than what, having 5 more megapixels, I think that's like really only
more megapixels is very rarely more quality.
Oh, yeah, I'm not suggesting that. Basically, if I really want a good picture, I'll just pull out a digital camera.
Yeah, there you go. But I think, you know, the camera in your pocket's always the best camera out there. People loved the G2 when it came out. I really like the idea of a phone that is free of cruft, whether that cruft is imposed by the guys who made the phone, LG, or the company that you buy the phone from, Verizon, Sprint, you know, T-Mobile. Let me look at the specs on the G2. I don't know if battery life is better. I would guess it's the same. But somebody in the chat room saying it's better. Yeah, it's a 13-megapixel camera. That is nominally a better camera. Like I said, the number of megapixels is no way to measure a camera any more than the number of megahertz is a way to measure a processor speed. There's a lot of other stuff that can go on. Battery capacity is a lot bigger. It's 3,000 milliamp hours. That's a significantly improved battery. So if battery is important to you, then probably you should look at the G2. Do you care about the carrier stuff that they put on there?
I mean, there's usually a lot of stuff that I don't use. I use my camera phone for taking pictures here and there.
I think that in that case, the Nexus 5 is more than adequate. I really like the pictures I get with the Nexus 5.
And then you figure on the internet, I like to be on my eBay accounts when I'm bidding on things, when I'm away from home and a laptop. So yeah, nice processor is important.
Yeah, I mean, they're very similar. I like the Nexus 5. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You can see me a little bit waffling nowadays when somebody asks me, well, should I get this phone or that phone? That's good. What it means is the phones are very similar now in capability and quality, and it really has become a matter of taste and choice, not a matter of technical superiority. Almost any of the top-of-the-line phones you can get out there are just going to be great. And that they're minor differences, and those are differences that really have more to do with your taste. So when you ask, as our last caller did, LG G2, Optimus G2, or Nexus 5, very similar phones. Yes, better battery life, and on paper anyway, better camera on the G2. On the Nexus 5, you don't have any of the additional carrier applications or stuff on there, no manufacturer stuff on there. It's a pure Google experience. So which is more important to you? And then you can make the decision. Somebody asked in the chat room, Mr. McButterpants asked me if I recommended the 5S, the iPhone 5S. Absolutely. If you like the iPhone, you're in the iPhone ecoverse. It's certainly the best iPhone out there. The fingerprint reader works quite well. It's pretty. And the iPhone does probably have the best camera on any smartphone. And I include the Lumia 1020, another very good choice. The differences here are very slight, is I guess my point. And each has some benefits in one area and some, you know, failings in another area. And so the choice comes down to, in many cases, preference. Good. That's good. That means you have lots of choice and you can't go wrong. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number to call. Archie, we just talked to Archie. Yeah, let's go to Pat in Anaheim. You're next. Hi, Pat. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon. I've got a question with a, is there a program or software that you can purchase, which is called a keylogger or a keystroke?
Why do you want a keylogger?
It's called a keylogger?
Yeah, why do you want a keylogger?
Well, what I want to do is, this is the objective, is to take the keystrokes and make those invisible to anyone that's trying to hack the computer.
Oh, that's a different thing then. The keylogger is what the bad guy uses to get your keystrokes.
Okay.
You want an anti-keylogger.
That works better.
So just like you don't want a virus, you want an antivirus.
Amen.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, good. I'm glad. Can you turn it down on the radio a little bit? Because I hear a little bit in the background. What I don't want is I don't want to give people ideas on how to spy on spouses or girlfriends or, you know. And that's what a keystroke logger is often used for. Bad guys use it to try to capture passwords.
Yeah, that's what I want to try to prevent. Well,
any good antivirus will keep an eye out for that stuff. But ultimately, there's no software, even a good antivirus, there's no software you could put on your computer that will prevent you from screwing it up. I wish there would. One of the reasons I talk about these Chromebooks and mention the Chromebooks, yes, they're less functional computers, but they're also more secure because it's harder to screw it up. But if you have Windows and to a lesser extent Mac and to an even lesser extent a Linux computer, if you have a mainstream operating system, the number one defense against getting malware on there, including keystroke loggers, is you. To get stuff on your computer, a bad guy has to get a program to run on your computer. Now, if he has physical access to it, all bets are off. If a guy can come in and sit down at your computer, and this is why public computers are so dangerous, if a person can sit down at your computer, nothing you can do. But normally, that's not the case. Your computer's in your house. You, I hope, have a password, and when you're not using it, it's logged out, and so nobody can just kind of get in and put something on your system. They have to use the internet to get into your system. That's now you have at least a path of attack that you can defend against. So everybody needs to do this, and this is something, if you don't do, you will get hacked. If you do, your chances of getting hacked are much, much, much smaller. Number one, you should always update the operating system. If you don't have automatic operating system updates turned on, turn them on now. We just had a second Tuesday of the month. Microsoft sent out more patches. Yes, there was a what we call a zero-day flaw. That is a vulnerability in the operating system that was so serious that hackers were attacking it and effectively attacking it immediately. Like, it took them no time. And there was one. Microsoft patched it. There pretty much is one every month. So fixing your operating system is number one. If you do not apply those patches, within days, sometimes no time at all, a bad guy's attacking. That means when you're getting out on the internet, he can run that program on your system without your knowledge because he uses a flaw in the operating system to get in there secretly. But there's worse news because, unfortunately, yeah, nowadays most of us keep Windows up to date. We know that. Microsoft's very good about updating. But there are other programs you use when you're on the internet that are maybe not updated regularly. And I particularly point the finger at Adobe because everybody uses Flash. Flash is notorious for bugs. I just got a Flash update just now on my Macintosh. When you make sure you keep Flash up to date. Very important. Adobe Reader, the program you use to read PDFs, also dangerous because somebody can put a PDF on their website. You're going along, minding your own business. You somehow get to that website. The PDF gets loaded by your browser. The browser says, I can't read this. Oh, Adobe Reader can. Launches Adobe Reader. That PDF can contain a payload that infects your computer, and you didn't even know it. So keep Reader up to date. Keep Flash up to date. The third program that's commonly used on the internet that is full of holes, Java from Oracle. Make sure your Java is up to date. And if you don't use Java, and many of us don't, uninstall it. And you should absolutely not have Java automatically launch in your browser. You could turn that off in your browser settings. Not JavaScript. That's different. Java, uncheck it. I bet you won't even miss it. If you uncheck Java support in your browser, that's blocking a very important route for bad guys. So that's number one. Keep your software up to date. Operating system and any software that goes on the internet. That's your browser. That's plugins for your browser. Make sure that anything that goes on the internet or can be accessed from the internet is patched. Really important. Now, the next thing is, okay, now a bad guy can't sneak onto your system, but he can still trick you. He could send you a link on your Facebook page. It looks like it comes from a friend that says, hey, I got a great video of what you did last night. You won't believe it. And you freak out, go, what did I do last night? You click that link. It looks like it's on a YouTube page, but YouTube says, oh, your Flash isn't up to date. How often does that happen? So you update the Flash, except it wasn't YouTube and it wasn't Flash. You just ran a program from a bad guy, and now your system's got a keystroke logger on it. So you have to be very careful about where you get software and what software you run because the bad guy, again, to underscore this, in order to get a keystroke logger or any malware on your system has to get you to run a program or get your operating system to do it without your permission. If you keep your operating system patched, you keep all that stuff that goes on the internet patched, you're the last line of defense. Now an antivirus comes in because an antivirus will scan regularly, you'll keep an eye out for that kind of stuff. But ultimately, it's you. You get a link in an email or in Facebook. I mean, anybody sends you a link. Even your bestest buddy sends you a link in email or in Facebook or on Instant Messenger or on Twitter. Don't click it. I get Twitter spam regularly. Just got one today from a guy I've known for years. Guess his Twitter account got hacked because it was there. All I got in the direct message was a link to a Russian website. Now, I did not click that link. I can promise you I did not click that link, but this is a guy I've known for years. And if I weren't paying attention, I might have. I got one a few months ago, I think I've mentioned it, had a link to TVVITTER. Not TW, but TVV. Looked like Twitter, wasn't. Asked for my Twitter login. I was smart enough, fortunately. Don't fall for that stuff. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we take you to Disneyland. Where there are no viruses, there's no malware, no keystroke loggers. Everything works perfectly because it's where Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, lives and gives us his gadget of the week. Actually, I shouldn't say that because you had a little trouble, didn't you?
I did. I had a some sort of a flash go through the line and shorted out my monitor and my computer. My friend Joe... I emailed my friend Joe Belline and said, do you know a good computer guy? And he said, me? I'll be there in half an hour.
Oh, that's a good friend.
And he said, if you're in luck, he said, there are only two very popular power supplies. He said, I have one of them here in a box. I'll bring it over.
You know
it
some
was
geeks.
The right one. I know it was great. It was great.
So the surge that went through your line, do you have a surge protector?
Yes. You know what? I do have a surge protector. That didn't work.
Was and it lightning? What was it that?
You know what? It was Con Ed was working out in the street.
Oh.
And I think they sent something.
Hey, here's a big cable. Let me chop through it with an axe. See what happens. What could possibly go wrong?
Dennis's computer shut itself off too. But
that means everybody in your building probably has fried stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
I was on the phone with a friend some years ago, and lightning hit her house, and her phone, everything got fried. Her washing machine, her dishwasher, and even if you have a really good power supply, surge suppressor from APCC or from the Trip Light makes very good ones. If it's that strong of a surge, it jumped right across the fuse and it could still fry stuff. So really, I think a lot of times when you're buying a surge suppressor, what you're buying is their insurance. you should check to see if it has insurance. Often it does. And you can say, hey, my stuff got fried even though it was on your surge suppressor. And they'll, in some cases, if they can't get out of it, they'll give you money.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
But that's good. No, so it's just the power supply. So it's working. Is everything else working?
Everything else is fine. No, good. I did check my policy. If the Hudson River overflows and a fish is found inside my computer case, I'm covered.
But
outside of that, nothing else.
Yeah, you have the aquatic insurance.
I do. That's I do.
Always
they said you live so close to the Hudson, you should have that policy.
Yeah. I've looked into the idea of having a whole home surge suppressor. And for stuff like that where Con Ed or...
Wow.
You know, that might be a useful thing. It's not such a big deal. An electrician can install it.
The funny thing is, in general, Con Ed has been very good. I think this is the first time in 30 years I remember something going through the building that knocked some stuff out.
Anyway, I'm glad everything's working again.
Yes, yes.
Dick joins us every week to pass along a gadget or two that he's found useful in his life.
Well, I didn't find this useful, but you raved about it so much on Tuesday's GizWiz that I didn't think it was fair for the radio audience not to know about the future of technology with the quirky dashboard.
Oh, I raved as in it's insane.
Yes,
Quirky dashboard. Now, Quirky we know about. It's kind of a cool company. They take inventions from inventors. They take crowd input, create a product out of it, share the money back with the inventors. And one of the things that they did at Quirky.com that's become huge is that that snaky little
pivot power.
The pivot power supply, which is really cool.
It's called pivot power. It's like a power strip that you can bend every one of the outlets so you could circle it around the table leg.
Brilliant.
So, they went a little off the deep end.
If I would call this brilliant.
It's called Nimbus, and there are four. It's your dashboard. So when you wake up, you look at four different screens, and you select what's going to be on them: the weather, your traffic to the to work.
This is people. You got to understand. This is an actual physical piece of hardware in your bedroom with four dials, like you would have on your car.
Yeah, exactly. That's why they call it the Nimbus dashboard. But then you buy peripherals that will send the information to this, and that's where they get a little nutty. The dashboard itself is $129.95, but then you can get Egg Minder that goes in the refrigerator.
What? Go ahead.
Egg Minder will send. Well, you wake up and you see.
You mean one of your four dials says how many eggs you have?
How many eggs are left? Exactly. Exactly. Porkfolio.
Wait a minute. That tells you how many pork chops you have left?
How much money you have in your piggy bank?
Oh, it's got a special piggy bank.
A special piggy bank. And probably the most useful is what we were talking about, pivot power. So they have now something called Pivot Power Genius, where you can make the different outlets addressable. So you can call through this, shut something on, put it on a timer, have control of it over the internet. So the dashboard itself, about $130. But then each one of these items is additional, like the Pivot Power Genius is $80.
You could spend thousands on this.
You could. You could. There's a little sensor pack called Spotter that you put in any room, and then you call that room, and it'll tell you the temperature, the humidity, what's going on. So anyway, it's a look into...
It's not
my future or your future.
It's quirkily made.
Quirkily made, exactly.
Yeah.
So if you can't live without...
I mean, you could have all this information on your smartphone and pick it up and look at it. But if you want to have dials like you would have in your car, you could.
Exactly. Then you need the dashboard.
And this was invented by Ryan Pendleton of Kenwood, Michigan. And he submitted it to Quirky, and they decided, yes, we're going to sell this.
Yeah, and Quirky is working with GE on this thing.
Yeah, I saw the GE logo on the back. What is that for?
Well, you know what? I think GE had the Link. I think it was called Link technology that some of these devices use.
So, okay, so it could be kind of an open system then.
I believe it is. I believe it is.
You don't have
Quirky's
to buy everything
carrying it.
Quirky.
ThinkGeek is going to carry it and should be out this month.
Gosh, if it were $42, I might buy one.
Oh, okay. Okay.
$120. Yeah. Also, it's only four pieces of information. You could have any four, but it's four.
It's four.
And it's a dashboard clock. It's weird.
Yes, it is. Well, I guess someone said, well, this looks neat.
Well, I know lots of people who have full weather, stations on their desk, right? So maybe it's kind of like that.
Yeah, I mean, it'll look trick in your bedroom, but you don't need it. I still have that Ford dashboard that I couldn't afford the car, so I just bought the dashboard.
You know what else people don't need but might still want is an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. I wonder how could I get one of those?
Well, you have to guess what that thing is that's on my website.
Oh, you mean the What the Heck Is It contest?
Oh, yes. Oh, you remember.
It's a microphone for mice. I don't know
what
it is.
Could be. Send that in.
So
we consider
these
that?
Are actual gadgets. If you guess right, you're in the running for one of 12 autographed copies of Mad Magazine. If you guess wrong, but you're clever, you actually are in the pool for 24 Mad Magazines autographed by this guy right here, Dickie DiBartolo.
Yes, sir.
The last one was a Pringles chip container that would keep your Pringles perfect in your lunch bag.
Yeah. And our audience likes junk food because more than almost 75 people knew exactly what that was.
I didn't. I was baffled. Yeah. Now, this... I have to say, I think I know what this is. I'm not going to say it out loud because, I mean, it's pretty obviously one of those Bluetooth headsets. Oh, I said it out loud. But if it's so obviously a Bluetooth headset that it can't possibly be a Bluetooth headset.
Uh-huh. You see, that's the beauty of the game.
And this is the other thing. It's a close-up picture, but you don't really know. There's no reference point how big it is. This could be 8 feet long.
Exactly. You could get in and drive this. You just don't know.
It could be a pivot that puts your boat in the water or something. I mean, we don't even know.
Yeah.
Or it could be really, really tiny. There's no way of knowing. Gizwiz.biz, that's Dick's website. Go there for information about the Quirky stuff and everything he talks about. And he's going to stick around to do our GizFizz in just a few moments.
Yes, sir.
And he joins us every Tuesday for his regular podcast. The Gizwiz, where we have many gadgets, and that's where I showed off last week. It was a good one last week.
Oh, it was amazing. It was that phone thing.
I had a dial phone with a cell phone guts, and you can carry it around and, like go to a restaurant, put your Western Electric red phone on the table and talk to people.
Yeah, dial phone.
Dial phone. Yeah. Hey, thanks for joining us, everybody. Thanks to Heather Hammond, Nathan Staten, our musical director. Thanks to you. We'll see you next time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today in our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.